Welcome, everybody, to the Minnesota House of Representatives Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee. My name is Frank Hornstein, the chair, for this very sunny March 4th, 2021. Our first item of business will be for our committee legislative assistant to take the roll to establish a quorum. Mr. Dodge.
Chair Hornstein.
Present.
Hornstein, present. Vice Chair Cagle.
Present.
Cagle, present. Representative Petersburg?
Present.
Petersburg, present. Representative Barr?
Here.
Barr, present. Representative Bernardi?
Present.
Bernardi, present. Representative Elkins?
Present.
Elkins, present. Representative Frederick?
Present.
Frederick, present. Representative Hausman?
Present.
Hausman, present. Representative Heinrich?
Heinrich, present.
Heinrich, present. Representative Kosnick? Representative Kosnick? Representative Mason?
Present.
Mason, present. Representative Murphy? Representative Murphy? Representative Nelson?
Present.
Nelson, present. Representative Olson?
Present.
Olson, present. Representative Richardson?
Present.
Richardson, present. Representative Torkelson?
Present.
Torkelson, present. Representative West?
Present.
West, present. There is a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Dodge. Our next item of business will be approval of the minutes from our March 2nd meeting. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the approval of the March 2nd meeting of this committee.
We have a motion to approve. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, this will be a voice vote, members. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, the motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Petersburg. We have our first bill on the agenda is Representative Fisher, House File 162. And Representative Fisher, I'm going to move this bill, re-refer it, move it and re-refer it to the Human Services Finance and Policy Committee. And we heard this bill, Representative Petersburg and I actually heard this bill a couple weeks ago in the Preventing Homelessness Committee, and we're interested in hearing this in the Transportation Committee because of its overlap with driver and vehicle services. So,
Mr. Chair, this is John.
Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, this is John. Just want to ensure your motion is to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. I think I may have heard Human Services.
Okay, I it was in the Human Services. Sorry about that. It was in the Human Services Finance and Policy Division, and now it is going to the Health. Correct. I amend my motion. We're on our way, re-referral to the Health Finance and Policy Division. Chair Fisher, please tell us about your bill, and welcome to the Transportation Committee.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein. Thank you to the Transportation Committee. I appreciate the opportunity to present my bill here, House File 162, on providing free IEDs to youth experiencing homelessness. This is something that I've worked in the homeless youth community for a number of years, and one of the biggest challenges we've had has been helping to secure IEDs for youth who are experiencing homelessness. Any given night in the state of Minnesota, we've got 6,000 youth who are homeless at any point. About 2,500 of these youth are under the age of 17, and they're overrepresented by people of color. 73% of the people that are homeless are people of color. Nearly half of those who have been homeless for more than a year, and many come from homes where they have experienced domestic violence, abuse, neglect, or parents' substance use or mental illness. And approximately one-third of these youth have children of their own. And also, a number of them are also suffering from serious mental health issues. To ensure that these young people not only survive in Minnesota, but be able to thrive and achieve their highest potential, It is incumbent upon us as policymakers to provide them with the services and other assistance for them to meet that goal. However, in many instances, for them to receive these basic services, it requires identification, whether birth certificate, and more importantly, being able to have access to that photo ID so that they can have access to be able to get a job, be able to get a bank account, being able to get even basic government services. Without these things, these youth are trapped in a situation that is a catch-22 for them that they can't get out. They have trouble getting access to not only basic medical services, county aid, but also education can sometimes be denied because they don't have that photo ID. And for a youth that is homeless, that is highly mobile, it becomes very difficult and a huge challenge. Income, dollars, being able to buy some of the basic documents is one of those issues. And then being able to get the documents. In one of the instances, if you want to get a birth certificate, if you're under the age of 17, the current law doesn't allow a homeless youth who has no adult to be able to get that easily. And so we're trying to streamline that process. And I know from the experience that I've seen, the number of youth that we've had challenges who want to get jobs, get work, get their education, and the biggest holdup has been trying to get that identification to them. And so these are the things that will help them out. One of the things that was a big help in us navigating, figuring out what needs to be done is in January 15th of 2020, the Department of Human Services and the Department of Public Safety got together and they put out a letter to the chairs of the different committees in Human Services and Finance of what would take and what needed to be done to help address this problem. And they came up with a list of different recommendations between the Department of Public Safety and in the Health Department of how we could get these required documents to the youth in a way that would be secure for them and at the same time be able to overcome some of the financial barriers that they run into. And so what my bill is in front of you is taking the entire recommendations that both the Department of Public Safety and the Department of Health said that needed to be done to make sure that this would work for our young people out there and for the agencies that serve them. And the big area that impacts this area is the ID that is actually coming out. Is the ID that we are specifying in here would be the non-compliant ID because the level of documentation that the youth would need to get for a real ID is way beyond the current barrier that they'd be able to get. And for them, what they need is just the basic non-compliant ID that they can use for basic identification services, for services, getting a job in this state, getting their education in this state, et cetera. And so that's part of the reason this, and that's the reason that this bill is here, is because it is asking for that opportunity. Is number one is to be able to have that identification being put out as a non-compliant federal ID and making it possible that this would be something that would be at no cost. And so there's going to end up being having to be a general fund appropriation to help cover these costs. And there is a fiscal note that goes with it. I will pause here for questions.
Thank you so much, Representative Fisher. And Representative Fisher, just personally, I want to thank you for bringing this forward and thank you for, you know, you know this issue well. You work on youth issues and homelessness issues, both as a legislator and professionally. So you know from what you speak, and that work is so appreciated. So I will ask members if they have any questions. I see Representative Heinrich's hand is up. Representative Heinrich, a question for the author.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for bringing this bill forward, Representative Fisher. My question just is on the six-month expiration date, why is that 6 months? Why not maybe a year? Just kind of looking for a reason for that 6 month. I'm sure that there's a perfectly good reason for that versus maybe a year. And my question would just be, what is the cost of a birth record right now if somebody would have to pay? And then I noticed in Section 7 in appropriations, we have the dots in fiscal year 2022. So just wondering if there's any ballpark on that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Heinrich. Chair Fisher.
Thank you, Chair and Representative Heinrich, for the questions. I'm going to go through, I'm probably going to forget one, so if I do, please come back to it. I'll start off with the 6 month. I believe that is on the birth certificate. And the reason we're putting we have the 6 month on there is because one of the problems that youth who are homeless experience is that they're so mobile that it is hard for them to have one secure location to keep vital documents like this. And it is not unusual that sometimes these documents become lost. And so we wanted to make sure that we had some kind of check out there that if a person's birth certificate became separated from that youth, that there was an expiration date on it so that somebody else who found it could not use that to create fraud on the youth. And what I mean by fraud on the youth is that when we're working with youth, it's not unusual sometimes that somebody has gotten hold of some of their vital information and have put created false credit card accounts out there, false banking, and these are some of the challenges that we end up having to navigate down the system. And so that's one of the reasons that we had that six-month thing out there so that it would be able to expire and would be very difficult for somebody else to try to reuse if that document became lost. The next thing that you were asking was on the cost of the birth certificate itself, and I have forgotten that number right offhand. I thought the only one I saw in the document here I had, I realized was for the driver's license itself. It was not showing the individual cost for the birth certificate. As I look through here, and I apologize.
Representative Fisher, we have folks from the Department of Public Safety and I believe the Department of Health that might be able to answer that question. Because I'd like to get that on the record. Do we have some staff on the call that Ms. Crawford, perhaps, would you know about the cost of a birth record?
Thank you, Ms. Mr.
Fassbender?
Chair.
Ms. Fassbender, either of you.
Hi. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Molly Crawford. I am the state registrar for the Office of Vital Records, so I oversee birth certificates statewide in Minnesota. The current cost for a ticket in Minnesota is $26.
Thank you, Ms. Crawford. I think that answers that question, correct, Representative Heinrich?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you so much. I was just wondering then if there's an estimate on what the 2022 appropriation would be. I just saw dots there in Section 7, so I was wondering if we'd have that some sort of estimate on how many homeless youth would be able to take advantage of this waived $26 fee.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and also to Representative Heinrich. If I am reading the fiscal note correctly, is that the dollar amount from the general fund in fiscal year 22 would be $72,000, and in fiscal year 2023 would be $32,000. Is that answering your question, sir?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, yes, Representative Heinrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, it does. Thank you, Representative Fisher. Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's all.
Okay. Ms. Fassbender, I see your hand is up, and I don't know if you wanted to add something, then we'll quickly go to two more questions and go to a vote. Ms. Fassbender.
Chairman and members of the committee, did you need the cost of the ID card still or not?
Well, I think while we have you, sure.
So the cost of a Minnesota ID card is $11.25, and then that does not include the filing fee, which is currently at $8.
Okay, that's helpful information to have. Thank you, Ms. Fassbender. Representative Petersburg, and then we'll take Representative Torkelson's question. Representative Petersburg. And then Representative Kosnick, and then we'll move this to a vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I won't talk much, but Representative Fisher, you know, one of my concerns, too, is how homeless is oftentimes targeted for a lot of various different crimes. And I did have some of the same concerns that you had mentioned earlier about identity theft. And even 6 months, you can create a credit card that is then effective beyond that six-month period. Do you have any insight as to how we can keep these from falling into wrong hands?
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Petersburg, that's the reason that we were having the limit on there for, first of all, for the 6 months on it, is trying to keep it much narrower and falling into the wrong hands. But in terms of the mobility, the The way that would solve the problem is if the youth had a stable place to rest their head on every single night. That's basically what the answer is.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Fisher, for bringing this issue forward. You mentioned the possibility of these being lost or misplaced or even stolen. What is the policy for replacement, and is that outlined in your legislation?
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in terms of the replacement, is I know that as we were going through it, there was a way for them to lost or stolen, they expire. What they would have to do is if they need another one, they would have to go in and reapply for another ID, birth certificate. So after one expires, if they don't have it and needs another one, then they have to reapply for another birth certificate. And from what I recall, is the limit on the statute was going to be, I think, and I apologize, I'm going between my different papers here, I believe was going to be a limit as to how many they could have each month, and it's going to take a second as I look for it.
Ms. Crawford, did you want to maybe you could shed some light on this?
Yes, I'd be happy to help, Mr. Chair and Representative Fisher. Last year, the bill had a limit, and we at the Department of Health, when we participated in the letter that went out back January a year ago, we were concerned with having to track the number of free birth certificates issued. That's difficult to do in our system operationally. And instead, we proposed this expiration date with no limit.
Okay, that's helpful. Representative Torgelson, does that get at some of your question?
Yes, I think so, Mr. Chair. So it sounds like they can just come in as many times as they want, or, you know, there is no restriction as to how many times they could come in and get this replaced.
And either Representative Fisher or, yes, good question. Either Representative Fisher or Ms. Crawford again. Ms. Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There is no limitation, and if the homeless youth is still in possession of the birth certificate that has expired, we would anticipate an exchange where they could turn it in and have another one issued without the same level of supporting documentation that might be necessary with the original application.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that answers my question.
Okay. Great. Well, looks like our last question is from Representative Koznick. Representative Koznick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't want to take up too much of the committee's time on this bill. I don't know that there's that much opposition. I'm just having problems with my laptop, and I was wondering what do you have to do to qualify to get a new license and an ID like this? What are the qualifications to be enrolled in this program? I can't pull it up on my computer.
That's okay. A good question, a valid question. Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein, and thank you, Representative Koznick. I'll go through it a little bit. It's possible I may miss something, so I may have to lean on staff a little bit for this. Is to go through it, they're going to have to be having things notarized. That for, first of all, for the birth certificate so that they can take that to the registrar's office. And then from there, then they would take that information over to Transportation Department of Safety to get that. There are statements that are going to have to be notarized by people who could vouch for where they are. In the statute, it lists a number of things that they would need that would be items to help support documenting who they are, whether it's a social worker, school records, et cetera, are some of the things. And I will pause at that point for some of the things that I may have left out that one of the departments might be able to fill in for me.
So either Ms. Crawford or Ms. Fassbender to represent Koznick's question. Ms. Fassbender.
Chairman and members of the committee. So basically they would need to have the birth certificate, and they would need that document that is from the a social worker or a school person saying that they are eligible. So they would need that birth certificate as well.
Thank you, Ms. Fassbender. Representative Koznick, any additional question, follow-up?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I don't want to belabor the point, and maybe we can do it offline. I know I've got some interest and questions on the Winkler bill, House File 1163, I think. I'm not sure for driver's licenses for those that can't provide citizenship. So does this, is this another way to do that or not?
Representative Fisher.
Representative Koznick, this would only apply for the birth certificates. The process there would only apply for birth certificates that are issued by people in this state.
Okay, well, we can talk about it offline. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, as somebody that doesn't have a birth certificate from this state or this country, it's just kind of interesting. But I don't want to belabor the issue. Representative Fisher, thanks for bringing the bill forward.
Thank you. Thank you for your questions, Representative Koznick. Is there any further discussion to House File 162? Seeing none, any final comments? Representative Fisher, before we vote.
No, thank you for the opportunity to present the bill. And Representative Koznick, I will send you an email to follow up on and touch base with you on your concerns, sir.
That's a great thing. I appreciate that, Representative Fisher.
You're welcome.
Okay, members, so I am going to renew my motion that House File 162 be re-referred to the Committee on Health, Finance, and Policy. Mr. Dodge, please take the role of the committee.
Chair Hornstein?
Aye.
Hornstein, aye. Vice Chair Cagle?
Aye.
Cagle, aye. Representative Petersburg?
Aye.
Petersburg, aye. Representative Barr?
Aye.
Barr, aye. Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Bernardi, aye. Representative Elkins?
Aye.
Elkins, aye. Representative Frederick?
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Representative Hausman?
Aye.
Hausman, aye. Representative Heinrich?
Aye.
Heinrich, aye. Representative Koznick?
Aye.
Koznick, aye. Representative Mason?
Aye.
Mason, aye. Representative Murphy?
Aye.
Murphy, aye. Representative Nelson?
Aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Olson?
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Richardson?
Aye.
Richardson, aye. Representative Torkelson?
Aye.
Torkelson, aye. Representative West?
Aye.
West, aye. There are 17 ayes and 0 nays.
Thank you, Mr. Dodge. There being 17 ayes and 0 nays, the motion prevails. Thank you very much, Representative Fisher. And now, members, we will move on to a discussion of the governor's budget on a couple of items. I am the author of that bill. This is for informational purposes. I just want to make it clear to those that are may be watching and those that are testifying and others that have an interest in this. Chairs of committees are asked, actually it's required to introduce the governor's budget. It doesn't necessarily reflect the views of that particular author. I feel like it's the disclaimer, right? This opinion piece doesn't necessarily reflect the views of the Star Tribune or whatever, right? So it's like I'm publishing an op-ed, but it's not necessarily mine, but I'm publishing it. And so that's how I hope we can look at the governor's budget. I think there's some things in here that are important for us to look at, other items that we may not support. But it is very, very important that we hear what the executive branch and executive branch agencies are thinking in terms of their budget. So with that disclaimer, I am the author of House File 1027, and I will hand we'll hand the virtual gavel over to our Vice Chair, Representative Cagle.
Good
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just kind of want to give a quick rundown of the time. We do have a hard stop for the MnDOT Met Council presentation at 2:20 so that we're able to allow for those county commissioners that are joining us to testify. We don't have overtime today, but we do have time tomorrow from 3 to 4:30 if people really want to continue this discussion. And so I see that we have a MnDOT commissioner here with us to give us an overview of the budget proposal. We would like to make it through the presentation about 15 minutes in order to leave time for members' questions. And members, if you could just hold your questions until we get through the presentation, that would be wonderful. Commissioner Anderson Kelleher, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair and members, I'm so happy to be with you today. Margaret Anderson Kelleher, Commissioner of the Department of Transportation. And I'm going to go very fast in the beginning. I have some slides here that most of you are familiar with, but they're useful slides for grounding us in the discussion. The back part of the presentation is the budget presentation. So here we go. All right. MnDOT was actually created in 1976. It combined the former Department of Aeronautics, Department of Highways, State Planning Agency, and Public Service Department. And of course, we develop and implement policies, plans, and programs for highways, railroads, waterways, aeronautics, public transit, Greater Minnesota Transit mainly, and motor carriers. And I'm not going to read this all to you, so we're going to keep on going here. The system itself is the fifth largest state highway system in the country, with over 145,000 centerline miles, including trunk highways and the local roads. That means that there are also nearly 5,000 bridges that are 10 feet in length or over on trunk highway routes alone. Actually, in this picture, you'll see the Highway 53 bridge. It's also behind me today, the Rukavina Memorial Bridge. And it is really a wonderful piece of infrastructure that is now on Highway 53. All right. We at MnDOT, 50% of the state highways and 35% of state bridges are now over 50 years old. We are planning on 398 construction projects planned for the 2021 biennium overall. We already have been working on a number of these, and this is actually Trunk Highway 43, the Winona Bridge in process that you see in this photo. We can go to the next slide. We work to also support our partners, three active ports with Lake Superior, four river ports as well on the Mississippi, and transit in all of the 80 non-metro counties. Of course, you'll be hearing from Metro Transit and the Met Council in just a bit. There's over 135 publicly owned state-funded airports, and there's 4,420 miles of railroad in the state, as well as serving the North Star Commuter Rail and Amtrak passenger service. How is MnDOT organized? We actually have eight districts, and I'm not going to go through that today. We've been meeting with you individually, but it is good for the public to understand that we do divide up into districts, and that is how we deliver our services around the state. Next slide. So there's a lot on this slide, but members, those of you who've been on the committee before are well aware. I think the most important piece is over on the right side of this slide. The transportation needs identified over the next 20 years are $39 billion. The available revenue is $21 billion. As you can do your math very quickly, we are short that amount of money to be able to maintain the system at its current level or bring it into compliance where it may be dipping below our measurements. So I'm going to keep us moving today. The next slide actually shows you the Minnesota Highway User Tax Revenue Fund, HUTD, and the revenues that come into it. The important part, and I don't know, I think there might be a bit of a delay. I hope that I am, okay, there we go. The important part of this slide is actually the red squiggly line across the midpoint of the slide. And what it shows you is that although there has been growth in the fund, when you adjust for construction inflation, the value of that dollar has been falling over time. Okay, we're going to go to the next couple slides here. This just gives you an overview of National Highway System bridges, what is in good condition today, and then at the end of the 4-year STIP and then the end of the 10-year CHIP, what happens. And you can see that at current funding levels, we begin to dip into places we have not been in the state of Minnesota, and that is the poor condition rating. And so I just want to keep you aware of that. We're going to have one more of these slides. We're going to look at pavement condition very quickly. And with pavement condition, you can also see a similar trend. We could talk about this one for quite a while, and I just don't have the time to go through it. Maybe members will have questions. I do have with me today Mr. Rodine, our CFO, and our budget director as well. So we're going to start on the next slide, which is MnDOT's strategic focus areas. So let me just... We're going to, hang on one second, I'm just getting my notes in order. Our first area is advancing technology. Our second area is climate resiliency. And the third you will see is sustainability and livability. So I want to talk about advancing technology first. In the governor's budget, the governor has recommended that we have a number of items that will help us be able to both get ready for the future of connected and automated vehicles. It also helps with our traffic management systems, and it keeps MnDOT and the public safe. And I will talk about that in a little bit of detail in another slide about how that would happen. And part of that's because of age in the system, aging traffic monitoring cameras, but also the cybersecurity risk. Climate resilience, of course, is something that your committee already has been talking about, Madam Chair, and will continue to talk about. So climate resilience for MnDOT is about being able to restart our flood mitigation program with enough funding to address locations where there have been persistent flooding issues. We also would like to create a proactive climate resilient infrastructure program. It will help with us being able to identify things like culverts that need to be resized, as well as improvements to the system to make it more resilient. Also, there are a number of on climate resilience, one of the bigger areas of growth at MnDOT for project costs is actually in the trunk line sewer capacity and deep stormwater tunnels. I know you probably are wondering, what is this? Is this a PFA presentation right now? But actually, one of the biggest contributing factors, especially in urbanized areas, are being able to add these important portions of the project in or to strengthen them. Finally, on sustainability and livability, we want to be able to make sure that we are doing our part to build out the electric charging stations, working on a program of using right-of-way for renewable energy development as well, and being able to work more closely with our communities on pilot programs that are not limited to creative non-use of the right-of-way for improved noise abatement strategies along state highways. These are requests we often hear from your constituents, are things they want to see us doing. It's a little hard to see in this slide, but over on the sustainability and livability portion, you can see a solar panel, and I'd like to just share that MnDOT actually has a small solar farm out on a site that we did not need the site any longer out in the Eastern Metro. And I went out and visited that site last year. It's quite amazing. We're looking for new ways. We're doing a lease back on that. And so we can certainly talk about those sorts of interesting ideas. We're going to go to the next slide to look at just a quick snapshot of where the Highway User Transportation Distribution Fund is at right now. And what you want to pay attention to here is that you can see that when we were coming out, we're kind of coming out of this recessionary period, we are still down about 5% compared to February of 2020. That's about $249 million. And so there is growth projected in the forecast, but we still find ourselves a bit behind. Now, I want to touch on the Coronavirus Relief and Economic Security Act very quickly. We're going to go to this slide that has March 27th on it. That's when the first bill passed, and that really came to transit and helped us stabilize our Greater Minnesota Transit System. Money went to the Metropolitan Council for Met Transit, and we also had some money for COVID-19 positive client transportation. We're going to go to the next slide. The next slide, it also provided a good size amount of money from the FAA to airports. And so here you can see this helped stabilize since air traffic really went down in COVID-19. So most airports did receive money, not every airport in the state. We're going to go to the next slide. In December, Congress did pass another wave of money. We are right now working with the distribution of this. So there's $162 million coming to states from this bill. We will be able to share that with our partners, both the Metropolitan Council and rural counties. And so we're working on that. There was more transit assistance and there was more aviation assistance. Wow, 15 minutes is not a lot. I'm going to tell you that. I know I'm about more than halfway through. So what I would like to go to next is what our priorities are for this legislative session with the budget. And they are equity, safety, maintaining our existing service levels, and policy items with minimal fiscal impact. We're going to swing through this quickly. I am not going to, Josh, I think we're going to go through this quickly and not read these slides on the particular funds, but go to the priority slides. So I'd like to go to the slide, Josh, that's Governor's budget recommendations. So the first area of this is equity, environment, and emerging trends. And we want to continue our work on advancing equity through small contracts. We've had a lot of success where we've been able to break contracts down and get more diverse contractors into our system. We need to build this program out even further. It's very intensive on the FTE side to be able to do that. Climate change and sustainability, this is a growing area in MnDOT, and we really feel we need to have an infusion of dollars to help grow it out. And then finally, emerging trends, the drone legislation that you will see is an important part of that. The next big topic, safety, securing people and supporting our system, includes cybersecurity investments. MnDOT has more connected devices than any other agency in the state out on the system. So one part of that is making sure that those devices are up to date and safe. The second part of that is we use a lot of applications at MnDOT, and we need to keep those applications up to date, not letting the bad guys in the back door of unpatched and non-supported technology. We also have a call in the governor's budget for rail grade safety with two new inspectors and some money for homeless encampment sites. I'll get into that a little bit more if we have time today. In maintaining current service levels, of course, we are asking for an appropriation to the state road construction fund out of our unreserved balance, an operating adjustment for operating pressures that include commodities, and we are looking to work with our local partners on transit to increase the administrative cap for transit assistance fund. And then finally on policy, just a couple of things, sale of surplus lands, there's a bit of legislation, and horse and buggy safety travel. We're going to try to keep going. Madam Chair, you tell me if I'm okay here yet on time. Okay. All right. It's the two screen today, so I had to look off to capture you. All right, here we go. Small contracts. $2 million a year to the Trunk Highway Fund for small contracts. This helps us really work with contractors who are disadvantaged businesses and getting them into being successful contractors with MnDOT. And we can talk about the success of that program more, but it's been very successful for MnDOT in the last few years. We want to continue to diversify our contractors. Next is climate change and sustainability. And part of that is liquid de-icing, including more use of things like beet heat. And when I say that, I want to say that's BET heat. And most of our, a lot of our truck stations don't have that capacity right now. It helps us reduce our road salt usage. And then we also have a number of public health and sustainability initiatives, so increasing the budget in that department, and energy efficiency at MnDOT facilities. We'll go to the next slide. Dedicating half of the $75 EV fee for EV charging infrastructure, and so you can see that there. And then we're going to go to the next slide, which is our this is actually a great slide, and I wish I had more time to talk about it, but it really identifies climate impacts for Minnesota. Minnesota is actually predicted to be one of the most impacted climates in our country, and you can see some of the reasons why here and where the risks are high. Let's go to the next slide. Unmanned air force, drones, basically, sorry, reducing the registration fee for small drones down from $100 to $25. This will help get compliance. The important part there is we just do not, when someone buys a small drone, registering it for $100 when maybe it costs $100 is not, does not seem logical to them. We want them to register. It's important. Important safety, air safety, to have drones be registered. Okay, and then cybersecurity, I mentioned this a little bit. We have great partners, Minute at MnDOT. We do a lot of work where we are customizing software, but I would tell you one of the biggest things we're going to be doing is implementing the Governor's Blue Ribbon and Council on Technology recommendations at MnDOT. Partly because yours truly speaking served on that council, and there's a lot of good things there that we can utilize at MnDOT as well.
Again, Commissioner, I'm just maybe like two more minutes.
I can do it, I think. On cybersecurity, this little, and for those of you who are into technology, we can talk about it more, but we, this shows you where we have been down in June 2017. This is a risk scorecard. The perfect score is a 40. You can see we are making our way up that by retiring old applications, patching things, and getting things secured. Okay, next one, rail grade safety. As I mentioned, two extra inspectors in rail grade safety. Why? Because already our four inspectors found between them in 2019 and 2020, approximately 4,200 or 300 defects each of those years, and in between 31 and 24 violations each of those years. We could definitely, they worked with the private sector on this, but this is an important safety issue. Next, homeless encampment sites. We are working. We need a little bit of funds from the Trunk Highway Fund to be able to engage to make sure that we can minimize the number of people encamping along the side of the right-of-way where it's not safe. And so we need some money to both coordinate with other agencies and develop some ways to honor the lives who've been lost often at these sites, but then not have them be an attractive place to be into the future, and working with community on that. Next slide. This is our state road construction appropriation request, fairly straightforward in terms of what is needed here. And what we will do with this is investing in the state highway system, working towards those performance goals you saw earlier in the presentation. Okay, I'm almost there, everybody. Operating pressures, the governor did recommend that we need an increase in our operating pressures. Those pressures are coming from some part of compensation, mainly healthcare. We've had an increase in our Cedar truck station lease payment out on the crosstown that was renegotiated with the MAC this year. And we have a little bit of an increase in our central lease. Okay, let's see. I think that we're to the administrative cap for transit assistance, and we would like to recommend changing this to 2% of annual revenues. This will really help those local transit agencies to be able to cover their costs. It would be a little under a little over $1 million a year to do this. Finally, a couple other pieces, some streamlined process around the expedited sale of any excess land that we have. And this actually can lead to some cost savings for MnDOT. And then finally, the horse and buggy safe travel legislation. Right now, horse and buggies have to travel in the travel lane. This would change that, and they would be identified as a slow-moving vehicle. It will clarify that the emblem helps identify them as a slow-moving vehicle, and we are partnering with DPS to create a safety manual to help drivers, law enforcement, and horse and buggy users of how to operate safely on our roadways. And I think I am through, Madam Chair.
Thank you for rushing through that. And I just also want to thank you for the kind of, I know you and I had a conversation about the homeless encampment piece, and I'm glad that some of that was language around that was revised. So
yes, thank you.
I will move on to member questions, and just want to gear up Chair Zelli that, you know, his time is going to be short too. So first on the list here is Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, I apologize, my video is not working today. Laptop issues for some reason. But the using half the fee for the electric vehicles, when that was put in, there was discussion, the flat fee for electric vehicles, there was discussion of having the fee originally be like $150, actually twice what it is now. Does the department have a position if they increase the fee to $150, and then use half of it for the purposes that is included in your budget?
Commissioner?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Kosnick. I think we'd have to look at that. Right now, this is pegged to the $75 fee. There is certainly more work that could be done on EV infrastructure that is an allowable cost of the public sector, and so there certainly could be more there. And I'll just pause there and see if Mr. Radin or Josh Knatterub have Hubinger, our budget director, have anything to say about that.
Mr. Radin?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Eric Radin with MnDOT Government Affairs. And, you know, I think the key for us is having some resources to help be able to build out an electric vehicle network so that people can travel across the state and have locations where they can feel comfortable that they can take their electric vehicles to. You know, I think we don't want to discourage people from owning electric vehicles. And I think if the fee is too high, you do perhaps run the risk of discouraging people to adopt this new technology. You know, but I know that there have been some legislative discussions about potentially adjusting the fee. I think, you know, if it was a a small adjustment, you know, that might be something we could talk about. I think there is a proposal in the Senate that would make us the highest fee in the nation by quite a significant amount. And I don't think we'd be, you know, willing to go that high, but so hopefully that helps respond to your question.
Representative Koznick, any follow-up?
Madam Chair, thanks for the time. Appreciate the responses.
Next on the list is Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I'll there are other questions regarding electric vehicles, but I'll avoid that for the moment because I want to ask about the inflation that the commissioner mentioned earlier. Do you have any breakdown, Commissioner, as to just how that inflation stacks up? You know, the cost of goods certainly is part of it, but also the way projects are designed is also must be part of it. I'd like to, you may not have it with you today, but something I'm very interested in.
Commissioner?
Madam Chair and Representative Torkelson, thank you for that question. I can give you an idea on that slide that covered the highway user tax revenue portion, what the overall CCI construction cost index is on that gives us that red squiggly line across the slide. And that has been averaging around 5.4%, which is, you know, much higher than regular inflation. And so we can get you a breakdown of what goes into that cost. But it is one of the things that we definitely are tracking. And I will say talking to the federal government about in the federal reauthorization bill, because we feel that this is something that can help DOTs all across the country be able to maintain infrastructure better. So Madam Chair and Representative Torkelson, we'll get the committee some more detailed information about the construction cost inflation indicator versus regular inflation and what's going into that.
Representative Torkelson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Commissioner.
Next on the list is Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just quickly, in talking about the electrical infrastructure, I know that basically what most people think about is electrical refueling station, much like we have gas stations today. And currently, private business tends to be better at providing those services than maybe government is. So is that the electrical infrastructure that you're looking for, or do you have intended something different for that?
Commissioner?
So thank you, Representative Petersburg. Madam Chair, I think the important part here is that MnDOT needs to be a partner in the siting, the selection of sites for these charging infrastructure pieces. There will be parts that are definitely MnDOT allowable. I do understand what you're saying. I think the marketplace will catch up with just kind of like what we see today, service stations. If you go to any Target in the metro area, you're usually going to see a Tesla charging pod right now. I do not own a Tesla. I'm just saying I have observed that. And so I think that right now that's an intermediary step towards having the private sector be able to really build out as the fleet comes online. And so in some cases with the money that we're talking about, these will be charging stations for our own fleet of electric vehicles. In some cases, we will be working to identify that right away that can be electric vehicle charging. And so This is an important issue, and I appreciate your question. It's not that MnDOT wants to eventually run all the electric charging stations in the state, that's for sure. I think the private market will be able to, you know, we're going to work together with them on this particular item.
Representative Petersburg?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioner. I know we'll have future discussion about it, but thank you for your discussion today.
All right. Doesn't look like there's any other folks on the list. So I appreciate your testimony, Commissioner. And with that, I believe we will move on to Chair Zelli. So again,
can I say thank you, Madam Chair and members, for your attention today? I feel like it was an auctioneer, and good luck to Chair Zelli.
So we have Chair Zelli with us today, and we'd like to make it through this presentation too in about 15 minutes. And so if we could hold our questions till the end. Chair Zelli, welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Charlie Zelli. I'm chair of Met Council, and I am going to see if I can share my screen here. Did that come through?
Yes.
Lovely. Well, thank you, and I will go quickly as well. I always appreciate following Commissioner Kelleher about an agency that is near and dear to my heart and those issues. We are total partners, and this is really about the metropolitan area. And just to review, the Met Council has actually two roles in transit. One is we're the MPO, so we're doing more comprehensive planning. But also, we operate transit. We contract transit in the area. I don't need to tell this to the committee, but transit is really fundamental, and particularly now when you think about the recovery, we play really an important role for the prosperity, for livability, and for key issues in the future, such as climate. Just a quick word about what's happened over the past year. No question, we've been affected. Ridership is way down, and we've taken special steps to provide additional services as well as just cleanliness and health protocols. But it's really important to note that on a work day, we've been carrying between 80 and 90,000 rides a day. So this has really been important work, and for essential workers or for essential trips. It's not just for work, it's for how people live their lives. And it's interesting too that the a lot of the bus system is down the least, which are where those who really require transit are taking their trips. In addition, Metro Mobility is providing up to 2,000 trips for health workers, as well as our food shelf activity. You know, we did cut back severely last spring. It's coming up to almost a year ago, but we've really, since about September, been back to about 80% of our pre-pandemic levels. And that's not 80% across the board. Some lines have more frequency in order to accommodate social distancing. And some areas, like our large commuter express areas, including North Star, are down the most, and we have cut those trips back more significantly. Clearly, we've taken special efforts to reduce risks, not just distancing, cleanliness, masks required, and certain kind of reconstructions of the bus area to maintain protection, particularly for our drivers. Just to review, this is our current metro kind of network. This is not including the regular route bus service, which is really the fundamental part of our service. These are the LRTs, as well as the arterial bus rapid transit. And it's interesting to note what has come online only really recently. The A line and the C line are doing very well. But more importantly, we look at really what's going to happen over the next, you know, 10 to 15 years. Much of this network is expanding really dramatically. And I know everybody knows this, but the Green Line extension, well under construction, 35% complete. The Orange Line is expected to open later this year. Blue Line extension has got renewed life, and we hope to have a new routing determined this year. Gold Line is nearly entering engineering. And of course, all these other arterial bus rapid transit lines that have been quite successful. We've identified the next few, and the B and the D line are actually under development and should be opening soon. You know, people have asked us, how do we determine these lines? And certainly it's in partnership with the community input, and it is more than just where's the heavy traffic? It is a number of different factors. And really, overall, it's important to consider how much those that really need access, not just for jobs, for groceries, for school, for living their life. And we've found some great success in, as I said, the lines that have already opened. But, you know, when we fill out what's already kind of been identified, we'll have 77% of people in the Minneapolis-St. Paul core areas will be within 10 minutes walking to a transit stop. And that's a game changer. The idea that you can actually live your life without a car really relies on this interconnected system, which we're really on the, you know, that we see a line of sight to actually get there. So now I'm going to get right into the budgets, which we're here today. This is kind of a good comparison to show what would be a kind of a business as usual annual budget revenue distribution. This is what you would expect roughly in 2018, 2019 on the left. And on the right is our kind of preliminary year-end results for 2020. And this is just to show that we actually had less of a reduction in the motor vehicle sales tax as we had feared. We did have a reduction, but you can see where the fares have really taken a hit. You know, ridership's down, our fare revenue, which is important, is way down. And then, of course, the federal share, the pie chart red, has been really picking that up. So, but for the CARES Act, we would have had to close major parts of our system this past year. And it really, even though we have had increased costs with cleanliness, extra sections, we've reduced our miles, but the CARES Act funding has kept the system alive. This is our expense budget for the calendar year 2021. And it's important here to note, and I know you all know this, but Metropolitan Council is on a calendar year basis. That's our fiscal budget year. And we're that way because most of our local partners, local governments, are on a calendar year basis. So when you'll see our government's recommendation, it really is talking, translating this into our biennium fiscal years, of course, starting in July. But to show this kind of where the funding is, you can see both by department and by category, the lion's share of our costs are these 3,467 full-time equivalent employees. I mean, this is really our biggest investment is the people who operate and maintain, you know, our system. Also, you can see we do provide a contract to a certain extent, and then there's some pass-through funds to the suburban opt-out transit providers. So now I'll just get into the budget recommendations. You know, the CARES Act funding, which I'll talk about in a little bit on a spreadsheet, really provided a tremendous infusion, both the CARES Act that happened in the spring, but then, of course, the more recent CARISA funding that really allows us to fund the operating deficits that we would have had in this next biennium. So we're actually planned to use those funds in the near term for operating deficits, for capital maintenance deficits for the next three bienniums. That's a lot of deferred maintenance that is being built up, but we see a line of sight over the next 6 years of funds that can be deployed due to CARES Act funding that has kind of freed up reserves in order to apply it in that area. And then the Transit Security Initiative, the $15 million this next biennium that we are, that you have heard about, where we plan to kind of lean into safety by employing some additional police officers, but many more transit representatives who are not sworn officers in our system. The governor has a couple of initiatives in language, one around that security, giving the Met Council permissive language to establish that administrative citations program. And then, of course, of great interest, the non-state funding of guideways. The budget language actually codifies the existing project development and operating funding agreements that we currently have with counties. No change, but it does codify those upfront funding project development and operating agreements. It does add the responsibility for a portion of the unfunded gap that currently exists for capital maintenance starting in the year 2027. We're not winning any awards for diplomacy, but I have to say I do appreciate and we understand that the county funding partners are objecting. And yet one thing that we all in this room agree on is that we recognize this is a really critical unfunded stream of costs that really needs very focused attention. And we're actually looking forward to meeting with our county funding partners in the next few weeks to see what we can do to find a reasonable way to address that issue. Getting to the actual funding recommendations, this budget proposes a level funding for both Metro Mobility and for our transit system operations. It also asks for proposes authorizations for our regional transit capital bonds. This is the funding that is really used as a local match for the federal funds that comes available for primarily bus replacements, but also some other capital improvements. Just a word on the CARES Act funding. As I mentioned, it was pretty significant. It was approximately $226 million to the region. $214 of that went to the Metropolitan Council services. There's more detail that I don't need to read, but just know that most of this was spent in 2020, calendar year 2020, but there is some additional remaining funds, and that will be spent during this next, this current calendar year. And then, of course, the next funding round came, approximately $186 million to the metro region. We have not officially allocated those funds yet, but we are anticipating that is the source of funds to cover our shortfalls, both Metro Mobility and Rail Operations. And it is eligible, pretty flexible, but it has to be deployed toward payroll, operating expenses, and additional maintenance due to pandemic. So it is limited, and we kind of philosophically are really deploying those funds to based upon need. And I'll just spend the remaining amount of time just going through the spreadsheet to save time. As you can see, these are three bienniums, and we have a structural deficit. And we've had actually a history of one-time funds over a number of years that help kind of solve that structural deficit. But it's important to note that though 2021 was an even bigger structural deficit due to our extra costs and the lower fares due to the pandemic, that structural deficit is still there, and it will increase even more when we get to the tails, the out biennium 24-25. But for CARES and the federal and the additional federal relief, we would really be in a pretty difficult position today. You can see that during this last year and then this next biennium. We're deploying those funds to and the reserves that we had in place to both fund operations, and then the $94 million in the second column toward the bottom is the ability to that we'll have because of the extra federal funds. We'll free up MVEST funding toward our capital improvement plan over the next 6 years. And then really just important to alert you that this next biennium, we're looking at over a $200 million deficit because the funds will be exhausted, nearly exhausted by that time. We are certainly looking for every way that we can build reserves. That is something that it is we have as a priority. On the other hand, additional expenses of security, additional expenses to maintain cleanliness and our social distancing is also a very important priority as well. These are estimates, and I've been 30 years in the bus business. I always say that pretty much it's fairly predictable until 2020, and then it's not predictable at all. We're really going to have to work and see how quickly the economy recovers this year. This year will be very important to know kind of how the operations will stand financially. We do know that transit just plays a really important role in that recovery, and we're working with the business community and our other local governments and our economic development partners to ensure that we're there to be helpful and both from an equity standpoint, especially as we think about the needs in the future. So that concludes my PowerPoint, and I raced quickly, but I hope I left a few time for questions.
Good. We're actually getting back on schedule here. So
I can go back if you'd like. No, I won't.
Maybe give some more time to Commissioner Anderson Keller. First on the list here, I have Representative Mason.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this would be to Chair Zelli. When did you receive the second CARE amount for, regarding the CARES amount?
Chair Zelli?
You know, I also have our regional administrator, Mary Bogie, who's also our CFO, and I don't know if Mary wants to answer that. I think it was this, it was toward the end of the calendar year, and then there's a complicated formula. So I would say it was in the last 6 weeks that we've got right. The actual dollar amount and that the actual application process to FDA is kind of currently coming in place. I see Judge Shenton's here as well. I don't know if you can give more.
I see Judge Shenton just turned his camera on. So welcome to the committee, Mr. Shenton.
Well, great. Thank you, members. It's nice to see everybody here. And I kind of did that by accident, so I apologize. But Chair Zelli is correct. Those dollars came in at the very end of December of 2020. And then we were going through the process of trying to figure out what those dollars meant for our region. And as the chairman said, that we're still trying to sort through some of that. And one of the things that we're trying to do is figure out how those dollars will be dispersed kind of based on the demonstrated need.
Okay.
Representative Mason?
So does that mean you're planning on using a different dispersion system for the second amount that you received?
Who would like to take that one?
Well, I'll start. Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Mason. The first round of funding was more by formula from the Federal Transit Administration that I think is the 5307, and we really followed that formula internally. But now I think there's more flexibility, and we really have to kind of see what the guidance that FTA is giving, which hasn't been fully fleshed out. So I think our priority is on demonstrated needs. So We will be budgeting that based upon those factors.
Because of all the deficits, I guess my question, ultimate question is, you've got the money and it's taken you this long to figure out how to distribute it when there are deficits all over the place. And I know when I talked with the Minnesota Valley Transit Authority, they have not received anything. And they, I mean, everybody is looking for money so they can continue the services the best that they're able. So to, I have a problem when you're sitting on this money for 2 months and not getting it out the door.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Mason, that's where it gets confusing because we actually don't have the money. They had not set up the process for application. We certainly will deploy it when we get it. We're not sitting on those funds. And certainly we are considering all needs across the entire region and including the suburban providers. So nobody is being left out.
So I'm understanding you, they gave you the money without the process to distribute it?
Chair Zelli?
I think at this point we really need, we're doing more investigations about where is the need, where are the deficits. We will certainly be interested in hearing from all of our partners where those deficits are, and we'll be able to, certainly every bit of our operation is slightly different. Certainly commuter services have been hit the hardest, but those are the areas that have also cut back services more substantially. So we have to kind of look at where are cash balances, where are the needs to ensure that we are able to provide taxpayers and customers proper service.
And I see that you have a couple other folks that hopped on. I don't know if they want to add anything. Oh, okay. Is that all, Ms. Representative Mason?
Yeah, I think I've gotten answers to most of my questions. Okay. Thank you.
Next up is Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Chairman Zelli, for being with us. I was going to call you former commissioner, but because I usually address people by the highest rank that they have attained, but I wasn't sure which was which. So anyway.
I don't know either. So it's fair game for you.
Anyway, this is only not directly related to your budget, but it is. Recently in the news, there was talk about ordering new buses, and you're ordering diesel buses. And can you dive into that a little bit, your experience with the electric buses and what the pitfalls or challenges are?
Sure, Zelli.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Torkelson. We are looking at a procurement for diesel buses for a particular use. But having said that, we are very committed to actually electrification of a majority of our fleet in the years ahead. We think that that's very important for our climate goals. We also think that's the future of a lot of urban transit systems. But as the technology has developed, we have had a number of problems with our C-Line, which are our electric bus program, and primarily, not to get too deep into it, but with the charging systems. In fact, the charging system in the garages just earlier this week, we had problems that this week they actually melted down, so they need to be replaced. So that's an issue, and we're working with our manufacturers, with the people who made the components. We're aware that other systems have other transit systems have had these issues with the larger buses. So this is specifically for 60-foot articulated buses. We have much better track record with the smaller 40-foot buses. This procurement is actually for the Orange Line, for the B Line, for the D Line, which are the larger 60-foot articulated buses. And because of the length of those runs, even if the electric buses that we have for the C-Line worked well, there still is some charging challenges currently because those are more express buses that keep moving from Lakeville all the way to downtown Minneapolis. So we definitely see electrification in our future, and we're kind of be in the next week or we'll be holding some more briefings to go into deeper details to what we're doing with electrification, but why this particular procurement is diesel. I will have to add the greatest benefit for these buses for climate is if you measure the carbon per passenger mile is so much less than what is which is burned by single occupancy cars. And so I think the great opportunity for these lines is to get people out of cars, and that really is the lion's share of the climate benefit. The propulsion system is important too, but it actually pales in comparison to the transit advantage of getting people out of car.
And Representative Torkelson, I'm trying to get us back on schedule so that we make sure or that we can leave some time for the commissioners. I have, do you have any follow-up to that?
No, thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, next on the list is Representative Petersburg. And then if Representative Hornstein, Chair Hornstein, would like to address the committee as well, and then we can move on to the county commissioners.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is because I know we're really short on time, I'll just give a statement. And that is that as I see the $240 million cliff in the next biennium, and knowing that there are new programs that are being initiated by the Met Council, as well as even increased ongoing expenses because of those, I am hoping that the council has charged Commissioner Zelli, Director Zelli, to figure out ways in which you can mitigate that over the next 2 years before that cliff comes, because it seems to me that would be prudent to do so. And so I know we'll have more further discussion, but I just wanted to be on record hoping that there will be some work done to reduce that at least down to 100 million rather than 244. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. I don't see anybody else on the list. So Chair Hornstein.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Zelli.
Thank you, Chair Zelli.
And thank you, Commissioner Anderson Kelleher, if she is still on. I also thank you, Madam Chair, for allowing for this discussion. I just wanted to make a couple of brief comments before we hear from a panel of county commissioners, particularly as it relates to an item that Chair Zelli did mention, which is this the capital maintenance and operation section of this bill and the governor's recommendation on that. I want to be very clear because there has been some confusion. Again, as I said before, this is a governor's recommendation. It's not a legislative initiative. And as such, I think that I don't see this particular provision as being included. And of course, this is up to the committee. But from my perspective as chair, I don't see it as necessary to include in the bill that we will be putting together over the next month, the 2021 Transportation Finance Bill. But having said that, it's my hope and my expectation, in fact, and I think many of my colleagues share this, that the Met Council and the counties will sit down and discuss this proposal and come up with a strategy together. As Chair Zelli mentioned, the counties have been partners and excellent partners in transit over the years. And so that as partners, they can come up with a mutually agreeable solution to this problem. And to the counties, I thank you for your involvement and your engagement, again, ever since CTIB was created and since CTIB was dissolved. And you have shown a very, very strong capacity and interest in engaging with the legislature over the last 2 or 3 weeks. I would like to see that engagement continue to address the transit funding gaps and the overall issue and our goal of funding the transit system here in the region. I'd like to see that level of engagement with the legislature and that level of activism that you've shown over the last 2 or 3 years, or two or three, well, many years, but 2 or 3 weeks as this issue of the governor's budget has emerged. So I hope that with that, we can have a good resolution to this issue and have the parties sit down, discuss, negotiate, and come to consensus in the coming weeks. And with that, Madam Chair, I think there are several county commissioners that want to testify to that particular item, and you can facilitate from there, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we have 6 minutes left. We are not able to go into overtime today. So I'm going to ask the commissioners to keep their remarks at about a minute. And we have Commissioner Anoka County Board Chair Scott Schulte. After him, we have Hennepin County Regional Rail Authority Chair Irene Fernando, and then Ramsey County Tony Carter, and then Washington County. So I'm gonna use a timer. So I apologize if I cut you guys off, but I want to make sure that everybody has the opportunity to testify. So Commissioner Schulte.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I will be brief, however passionate. The proposed county responsibility for guideway funding policy change in House File 1027 dramatically shifts the funding partnership between the state and counties for transit expenses. The policy removes local control of locally raised tax dollars and establishes a legal obligation for counties to be responsible for building, operating, and maintaining transit guideways. This would undo a long understanding and partnerships between the state and counties that has allowed our regional transit system to develop. And the policy would seriously limit our ability to expand the Metro Transit system. As I was a member of CTIB, we discussed regularly where the long-term plan was for capital replacement. We were assured it was coming. We were assured that was going to happen. To this day, we've not seen it. I believe it's required in the full funding grant agreements that are signed for all these transitways. This is important. We do need to work together. Chair Hornstein's right. I look forward to those conversations as we move forward. Anoka County wants to be a partner, but this is not ready for prime time. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair Schulte. Next up, Chair Irene Fernando.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Irene Fernando, and I'm the Hennepin County Commissioner for District 2 and Chair of our Regional Rail Authority. Hennepin strives to deliver a safe, equitable transportation system to serve 1.3 million residents and 42,000 businesses, which employs a third of our state's workforce. We've partnered with Met Council and other counties to build a transit system that has secured over $2.5 billion in federal funds, supported thousands of construction jobs, and has generated billions in economic development. The proposed changes overturns this funding partnership because the policy would remove local control of locally raised tax dollars and making it legally our responsibility for uncovered costs. County resources would then serve as a blank check, jeopardizing our ability to exercise the fiscal oversight it needed locally, as well as inhibiting our ability to expand the system. There's broad bipartisan agreement that our transportation system needs more state funding. We need equitable long-term funding solutions to deliver high-quality transit to underserved communities, better connect people with jobs, and reduce carbon emissions to benefit all Minnesotans. Thanks to the committee for your consideration, and as Chair Hornstein stated, I look forward to continued engagement to arrive at a mutually agreed upon solution. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Next up, Ramsey County Board Chair Tony Carter. And you're on mute. Oh, there we go.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and representatives. I'm Ramsey County Board Chair, Commissioner Tony Carter, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify today respectfully opposing Article 3, Section 2 of House File 1027, which deals with the governor's budget bill for the Met Council. This region benefits from an integrated transportation system. The state, counties, and cities are all supportive of a network that helps our millions of residents get to things that matter, jobs, events, healthcare services, restaurants, families, friends, etc. As with any multi-layered system, this network requires many partners to build, to operate, and maintain. Ramsey County has long been a partner of the state and this Twin Cities region for both transportation and transit needs. We partner because we know delivering important transportation projects requires many agencies to contribute. In Ramsey, our transportation sales tax and our regional rail authority levy are committed through the year 2053. To pay for transit guideways in our county. Our funds are used as a match to bring federal dollars to Minnesota. suddenly requiring a few counties to take on even greater responsibility for the transit guideways not only puts key projects at greater risk, it's also bad faith among partners who've expended resources and worked hard only to see long-planned projects important to our communities and businesses put on hold. The
Commissioner, I hate to cut you off, but we're really running short.
Thank you. Just to say the investments we've made are focused on equity, especially for transit-dependent users in the urban core. We appreciate that we've made our area more attractive to those from out of the state. We strongly support a comprehensive transportation funding package that includes transit, and thank you.
Thank you very much. And last up, we have Washington County Board Chair Lisa. Can you pronounce White. Your last name for me?
Yeah, White. My name is Lisa White. Yes, thank you. Lisa White, I serve as chair of the Washington County Board, and I also had long tenure on the county's Transit Improvement Board Executive Committee. Thank you for this time today with the committee. Washington County has supported transit investment because the business sector has identified a robust regional transit system as critical to employers for workforce recruitment, retention, and expansion. The transit system operating now resulting from Metro County development and investment is an economic engine for the local, state, and regional economies. I took critical votes during my time with CTIB and also voted to reimpose the transportation sales tax with Washington County within Washington County in 2017. The county board was clear to our communities at that time that the commitment was only for capital dollars to match federal funds with no more than 50% operating cost commitment and no county dollars toward capital maintenance. Furthermore, the bill language is in direct conflict with Minnesota Statute 2978.993 that requires counties to hold a public hearing and adopt a project plan that lists specific transit and road projects that are eligible for the county transportation sales tax funding. This proposal today by the Metropolitan Council compromises critical transparency for both state and local elected officials. Importantly,
I apologize. We're getting cut off by House TV. So if you want to submit anything in writing to the committee, we would definitely appreciate that. Members, thank you so much for being timely. I appreciate it. And with that, we are adjourned.